1960. Mm-hmm. We then decided to build an accounting system on the computer because it had a number of advantages to do so. And I think we also felt it was the coming thing. Mm-hmm. Remember, these were the early days of computers. They were using Leo 2 was the machine at that time, built by Leo Computers. It was Leo Computers, it was part of J. Lyons, in actual fact, one of the first machines developed in this country, Leo 1. Leo 2 was a sidetracking little vast valve machine with mercury delay tubes for store. It took up an area probably 10,000 square feet. It was a very large room anyway. And it was a very unreliable machine because of the valves probably. So we had a lot of trouble with it. Anyway, we developed an accounting system to go onto that machine to take place with our punch card system. And most of it was ready by about 1963. I think it was 1965 when we actually went live on it, against my recommendation, because the one thing it proved to be, it was totally unreliable. And our debits invariably wouldn't equal our credits, because somewhere along the line, the way the machine worked, it would drop binary bits, which changed values. So we ended up going live. The manager of the firm at that stage made the decision to go live. We scrapped our punch card system, which was getting old by then. And we never balanced again for another 2 years until, we balanced sometimes with a great struggle, but it was very difficult. We were a much larger firm by then, of course. Meanwhile, Leo 3 had been developed in 1960 as a machine, 1960-1961, and that was a much better machine, much faster. It was a multi-programming machine. I can't think of the right terms now, but you could run more than program on the machine at once. And we decided in something like 1965, about the time we went live, we would actually reprogram the whole lot to go onto this other machine. And eventually, we formed a bureau in the city with Leo Computers in Austral House, where which we moved to in 1960. And we had a Leo 3 installed in our firm, which we bought, which they operated. And they operated on our behalf and operated on their own behalf as well, because you appreciate with the sort of work we did, our work had to be done overnight between the close of dealing and before the next morning. And there was a lot of spare time on that machine. Plus the fact you could run concurrently different programs on it. It meant you could actually do a lot of work. Quite a powerful machine. We then had a very successful system which we developed further. And we enlarged the scope of the system, taking in all our transfer work, ticket accounting, to give us a real stock control system, position agreements, which took account of actual physical boxes, to make all our return to the inland revenue related to stamp duty and Section 42 liabilities. Remember in those days, Section 42 stamp duty was 2%. Jobbers had a jobber stamp concession. I don't know whether this has been talked about already. You could stamp on 50 pence, and if you hadn't taken that stock out of your name within 2 months, you paid the balance. So one of the elements of control, which was quite important, was to try and turn your stock over so as to avoid paying the other 1.5% stamp duty. So we actually computerised this whole thing. We ran a computerised diary, essentially, and allocated stock against the allocated an identity to the stock that was delivered, and then allocated the stock going out against it, and ran the whole thing. So we tried to avoid the stamp duty as much as possible, and gave dealers the lists of stock that would be coming up liable for stamp on the on the theoretical basis that they could actually sell it discounted slightly and still be worthwhile. Most of them never seem to understand that. Reluctantly, I mean, I don't know what your impression of dealers are, but an awful lot of them are not very intelligent people. Competent people, yes, but not clever. And not logical, necessarily. My view of a dealer is a Baropoia complex is a very good one for the majority of equity dealers. They have to be quick of mind, have to be fairly narrow in their view, and be able to react quickly. But it doesn't necessarily mean they're actually very logical or intelligent people. They might find that insulting, some of them would, I'm sure, and some wouldn't. One of the best dealers we ever have is a chappy named Tommy Anderson, and he was a typical East Ender.
I've actually interviewed him.
Have you? Well, he's a smashing chap, actually. I don't know where they came from, the East End, but it's a typical East Ender, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Typical sort of, you know, selling apples and pears. And
Mm.
But he was a very, very competent dealer. Mm. Very competent indeed. I mean, obviously, they had to have incredibly good memories and this sort of thing. Mm. Be very aware of what the book positions were, and who had sold them what and this sort of thing, who was interested in what. Anyway, I mean, it's a different sort of approach to life in the final analysis. To organise and run an office, you have to be logical and business-like. You have to think. You have to think broadly.
Mm.
Anyway, I'm digressing again. I've lost my train. I'm sorry.
Leo 3.
Yes, well, Leo 3. We say we'd put the system in. We ran into problems at a firm in the boom of 1972 because the system we had actually wasn't fast enough to cope with the business volumes. Our business volume went up to more than 10,000 bargains a day at that stage. I can't remember what our peak was. I have a vague memory. Our peak was 15,000 bargains. One little aside. In those days prior to the stock exchange systems coming in, we checked manually. Checking was the call over bargain between the seller and the buyer, the jobber and the broker. And we had a measurement which we found worked through thick and thin, which was one checking man, we checked 500 bargains a day. So one of my problems as manager, I became manager in 65, 68, I can't remember which. Terrible, isn't it? Manager of the firm. One of my problems every day was to look at the number, to estimate the number of bargains the night before in order to get, ensure we had enough people to check our bargains the next day. And you can well imagine finding 30 people to go checking as opposed to 10 people to go checking. It meant that checking was our first priority in the context of settlement in terms of having enough people to manage your checking. Because until you checked your bargains, you were at risk, obviously, on your dealing side. If that bargain was not in existence as far, you could find someone, no one to adopt that bargain because you identified the wrong firm and no one came forward, then you had to take it off out of your book, so you change your dealing position. So one of the important things was checking, obviously. But anyway, I was saying we ran out of capacity in the context of machine. We actually had to go on to a different Leo machine. We went on to one of the post office machines. They had some very big Leo machines, which are much, much faster, would actually eat our work. That's got us through that problem.
How did you organise that? Did you have to come up with some arrangement with
the post office? Yes, we had an arrangement with, well, Leo did it for us, Leo Computers did it for us with the post office. And my memory says that we took part of, they weren't using one of their machines. They had what they called 326s. They were much faster, much more capable machines. Had much faster. We hadn't got disk drives in those days. We had tapes only. And the tapes were very much faster than the tapes we had. I think we had 28K and they had 80K, something like that. So it made a hell of a difference when you're sorting. And the machine cycle time was much faster. But I remember rightly, they actually took some parts of our machine to put on theirs because I hadn't been using it, and our operators operated it. So anyway, it got us through a very difficult period. And of course, by then it was ICL. I'm talking about the computing side, but of course, in many ways, the computing side was an absolute prime import of the firm. In those days, in 1972, the interesting thing about the computing in the context of the firm was, because, in my view, we had actually done it successfully, the partnership had very little knowledge of the office, very little concern about the office, except if it didn't function properly. And in 1972, because of the problem we had with the capacity of the machine, we didn't function properly. And then when we went to this bureau, and the post office, they did actually run a bureau, we went onto this post office machine. For a while, we had problems of getting the work done overnight, so it would mean we didn't have checking the following morning available to us to check our bargains, which meant, of course, the brokers were up in arms. They would go into the stock exchange itself to see our dealing partners, which in turn made them aware of the fact that they had got an office and it had to function properly. And I suppose, in a way, rather a jaundiced comment, but office functions properly, they forget all about it. If it doesn't function properly, it becomes very important. So in business, when you're very busy as a firm, they get worried about settlement and it becomes quite important to them. And when you're slack, then they get worried about the number of people you've got. And whilst at Durlacher, they never, to be fair, they never pressed one to get rid of people. We always practiced sort of running down our staff and running it up again, in a sense. And one thing I was always aware of as a manager is you never had the right staff numbers. always too few or too many. But I understand the game because it was quite a considerable cost, obviously. And they didn't like seeing people sitting around doing nothing, which could happen when you were slack, of course. But my particular concern was that as one of the jobbing firms, Wed and Aykroyd were the two jobbing firms, really, it was important for us to do our job properly, which meant we needed expertise. And in my view, it was very important to maintain the level of expertise we needed, which we did. I mean, the firm was supportive in that sense. We, in computing terms, Clive Richards was the managing partner. God, I mean, there's so much in terms of this history of jobbing and Wed. I'm just trying to think when Wed and Durlacher merged.
It was in 1968.
1968, yes. Well, prior to that, Durlacher has got larger and larger, but it had always been equity jobbing firms in various markets, but equity jobbing firms. And by then, of course, you no longer had these separate markets. Obviously, the stock exchange had changed before that, and we had the new floor and this sort of thing. But come the Durlacher and Wed merger, we're bringing together a Gilt Joanne equity jobber, primarily. I mean, Wed did job in some equities, but not ex-Hedder and Turner, but not that many. I expect this is the background has been explained to you before. Dick Wilkins and Sir Nigel Morden. We merged together as two firms, and at that time, actually, Wed were still on a punch card accounting system. And they also had great difficulties in terms of their stock control side. And I was asked to actually put in a system for them, which we actually did before the merger took place. And interestingly enough, Dick Wilkins actually gave me a shotgun as a present, as a recognition of what I'd done for their firm.
Why a shotgun?
Well, I was interested in shooting, and I think he knew that. And I had a Holland shotgun for them, which was rather nice of them, to say the least. Rather nice gesture. So they were actually, we actually designed a system for them and put it in all within 6 months, which was quite a thing to do, quite a feat. We had to work many hours to do that. And they came around and moved into our building before the merger. Mm. So we had two firms operating on the same floor using two systems, both on our machine, in actual fact, with two sets of management. Mm. And then we merged together for the first period of the merger. We had sort of a joint management situation, and then I became the overall manager and could shake some of the problems out. And that was 68.
Had merging the two firms created problems?
Every merger created some problems because, I mean, one of the things is with the best will in the world, people actually look backwards to what their firm was and what they did in that firm and identity. And in a sense, my comment on mergers would be the people that merged into the firm would always identify themselves as a group. Mm. The partners would identify to their staff, the staff would identify together. As opposed to the firm, the people that were in the Durlacher firm and joined Durlacher as an employee, they were just part of the firm in a sense. Mm. But yes, there were always problems. There were problems of assimilating, of building them into our work practices, assimilating the people. Attitudes. I mean, it's inevitable when you had mergers, really. I mean, having said that, the firm always settled down over a period. Mm. But years later, you could see a partner come up into the office and he'd walk over and talk to people he knew from his old firm. Mm. Again, understandable in the sense that as the firm grew much larger, of course, they would no longer know people. Mm. You know, when you get to 400 or 500 strong, then I'm afraid the business of knowing everybody like they knew in their old firms of 30, 40, 50 people went out of the window. Mm. So it was understandable why they sort of identified back. But in a way, and sometimes it was embarrassing, actually. Right.
And you've already said that Wed was a Gilt firm. Did that create different settlement problems?
Oh, yes, very much so. The real problems from a management viewpoint was the Gilt settlement process started about 10 o'clock and finished about 3 o'clock. I mean, it's a slight exaggeration, but it finished. It was absolutely done by about 4 o'clock. Once you'd actually sorted out all your borrowed stock and moved it out to the money brokers, it was finished. So they had a very intensive period So it started at 10, and then you had call over, and then you had settlement, stock movement basically, and then you had money movement, and then you had your securing of your loans, in actual fact. Oh, I've left something out, but it doesn't matter. Borrowing of stock.
Mm-hmm.
And at that stage, of course, we hadn't got gilt CGO. I mean, these are all relatively recent things. So it was all manual, and you always settled your gilts on the run, and you were never normally banking until well after 3 o'clock in the afternoon, despite the banks closing at 3. You'd often be banking at 20 past half or 3. I'm talking about banking millions. So the gilt sort of settlement was short and intensive. And they wouldn't get out to lunch. Equity settlement, even when you were frantically busy, wasn't intensive in the same way. It was much more a plod, especially in their eyes. And you would work on the ticket day, passing days, you would work until, in the booms, 10, 11 a night. And the only way we could contain the level of business we had in 1972, for instance, was the whole of the office, every single person in the office, and I'm talking about 200 people, were turned over to the movement of tickets through the firm. Once they'd finished their normal work, so the gilt people would be working very hard in part of the day, and then they'd be expected to work doing ticket passing from sort of 5 o'clock until 9, 10 o'clock at night.
Mm.
And it created friction, obviously.
Mm.
And the gilt people thought the equity people were working that hard, and the equity people would look at the gilt people and think, well, they're not working that hard either, you know. And they can, and you know, it's something you could never totally persuade them of.
Mm.
I mean, I move people deliberately from gilts to equities and equities to gilts to try and help to break it, but you could never break it completely. Because you could never move the hardcore anyway, you know, because of the skills. So yes, we did have problems. Yes, we lived with them. They are no longer there today in the same way, because gilt does really just do gilt settlement. There is CGO, which has changed the gilt settlement. Talisman, bargain accounting, then talisman has changed equity settlement dramatically. So you've got rid of the significant peaks we used to have in those days.
Was talisman the next important innovation as far as settlement was concerned?
Well, I mean, going right back, you had ticket passing,
mm-hmm.
then you had clearing, then you had bargain accounting, then you had talisman. That's the sort of progression,
mm-hmm.
and obviously the Stock Transfer Act and central stock payment. I've missed out central stock payment, which came before bargain accounting. So progressively, you've had the centralisation of settlement and the movement from totally manual into clearing, for instance, was run on the centre, did it on punch card accounting machines. And then you had bargain accounting, which was done on computers, which was a forerunner to talisman, and talisman, which was done on computers. Bargain accounting didn't do away with tickets, but it centralised the calculation of what we call the trace, in other words, who the buyer's ticket went to, and he knew it, who it went to, from records of the centre pass to the buyer. And it also produced the ledger accounts and the ledger differences, which were settled with the centre. So it was really the first big and significant step in the context of centralised accounting systems.
Mm.
In actual fact, I was involved with the decision to go to bargain accounting before talisman, because I was, I've been very involved with the stock exchange in the context of centralisation of systems. I was on a committee in the 60s which was related to clearing and looking at developing clearing, and then I was on the committee related to bargain accounting. I was a chairman of the talisman
mm-hmm.
Review panel through from the development to it going live, and I was on various other committees, rules committee related to talisman, this sort of thing. Very busy chap in those days. And it was my view that you couldn't actually jump from manual systems, which a lot of firms still had, into a centralised system like Talisman without something partway through. And I don't suppose you've heard of him, but a person called Michael Josephs and Michael Jenkins and Michael Bennett were the three that were involved in the centre in those days. Michael Josephs and I felt that you couldn't expect firms to make the leap from, as I say, the manual system, then the clearing, which was essentially manual, semi-manual, through to Talisman. And we actually worked out the bargain accounting system as a step which was recognisable from the past, but was moving people into a central accounting system.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very successful, in fact, a lot of people. We had great troubles with development talisman, overrun of time and money. Firms of course, we got to the stage where firms weren't making much money, so money became very important in terms of spending. So Stock Exchange had a difficult time with Talisman. And a lot of firms, bargain accounting, their eyes were so successful, they didn't want Talisman anymore. I can remember a dinner we had with the Managers Association, which I was a member of the committee. I never wished to be chairman, although they wanted me on occasions. I was too busy in my own firm. We had a dinner with Bob Fell, who was chief executive of the Stock Exchange. Again, I can't tell you the year now. These sort of things go out of one's mind. It's during the development period, Talisman. And every single member of the committee, apart from myself, said, stay with bargain accounting and don't develop Talisman, which I severely rounded on them and told them they were totally wrong. And anyway, I was fairly unpopular at that time. But I was also chairman of the Talisman committee. And I had to believe in it. I mean, I didn't believe it because I had to, but I did believe in it. I suppose, in many ways, because I had been so heavily involved in computing at WED. I mean, I'd really been almost a one-man computing band for many years, in the sense that I didn't do the program. I did the analysis of what we needed and made sure the specifications that were produced by the analysts were exactly what I wanted, and then ensure those systems went in and went live properly. I used to control the testing of those systems, improving those systems, going live with those systems, and reorganization of the office to use those systems to the best capability. Which again, I think, frankly, a lot of computer systems fail because the management aren't involved enough and don't ensure that the system meets the needs properly, and B, you actually use that system to its main capability because you've understood how to manage your business properly using a new way of doing things, which often is capable with computing, which isn't. You're not capable of doing certain things without computers. Anyway, that's an aside, really. Lost my trend again.
Were you in a position to have some idea about what other jobbing firms were doing in terms of office technology and computerization? For example, how did Duelecker and then WED compare with what other firms were doing?
We'd all gone much the same way. Again, I think one has to remember that once you've started along a route, and you're growing as an organisation, your business level are X, you can't fundamentally change anymore. You have to, whatever system you move to has to be a progression on top of what you've got, because you have actually got to prove a new system that it works properly against an old system, and therefore it's got to be compatible enough to actually reconcile one to the other. So once you'd had a punch card accounting system, a lot of the firms, jobbing firms that went onto computers, their computing system virtually emulated their punch card systems. Ours did initially, but then we gradually moved it on from there and built on it from there. Ackroyd, yes, they developed their own system. They had their own in-house systems and programmers. At the end, I suppose, they were, before Big Bang, they were probably a bit ahead of us because they'd gone onto some real-time systems when we were just actually in the process of developing some real-time systems. Pinching Denny, yes, I mean, I knew the managers well. I knew the computer managing people, Pinching Denny, computer manager, very well indeed. Biz Goodno, I'm not so aware. Smith Brothers, always pretty well a mess, I think.
In terms of their back office?
Yes, in terms of their office. Never quite in control, in my view. They probably wouldn't like me saying that, so they wouldn't. Certainly Ackroyd, because we were very close to Ackroyd. Certainly Pinchin, because I was quite close to them. And we were all moving much the same way. We, as a firm, actually went a slightly different direction, in the sense that, I think I mentioned Clive Richard earlier on, who was the managing partner of Duelecker at the merger of WED and Duelecker. Eventually he left, and Gerald Dennis became managing partner of WED Duelecker. We had, at that time, we bought in our own systems people. We had only a very small team, 3-4 people. And the chappie in charge of the systems, who was responsible to me, was very good indeed, brilliant man, Michael Brooks. And eventually Clive decided, and it certainly was against my recommendation, to sell off our computing interests, form another company, DataSolve. And in a sense, we ended up employing a bureau to do all of our work, both our development and our actual operational work. And DataSolve redeveloped our system. And we had three analysts at DataSolve responsible for development of the system, with me at Wed controlling it and dictating what was to be done. I suppose they would actually call it dictating as well. Mm. And that system, and again, I can't remember the year it went live. I suppose it was in the 70s. And eventually, anyway, God, my memory is incredible. I mean, these are all going out, all these sort of dates and times, all going out of my mind now. Eventually, we brought the whole thing back in-house. Mm. We had a lot of trouble, really, getting all the work run to time, because DataSolve, as a successful bureau, our work became a smaller part of the bureau. Mm. The people that knew our work became less. We started running into problems of not getting our work back overnight at the right time, this sort of thing. In other words, it deteriorated it. Yeah. I mean, my own view is quite clear. If you actually want to run and have decent systems, you actually do it in-house and control it in-house. Mm. And eventually we brought it all back in-house, bought our own machines. We had ICL machines. And brought our systems people back in-house from DataSolve. We had three of the people came across to us and they formed the core of the system team at WED, and then we built on that, and we then built a foreign system. That was the last system we built actually prior to Big Bang. We were in the process of building a real-time dealing system. We'd got a long way down the design route. We ran into great troubles, political troubles to my mind, with with Barclays, the Barclays people, the Barclays Merchant Bank. And in the end, the project was cancelled. They put another system in, which in my view was totally inferior, but anyway, it's beside the point really. It worked in the final analysis eventually, after lots of trouble. Mm. It's what mattered. Didn't do any foreign currency and didn't do a lot of things, but it worked in terms of the main part of the equity dealing, which is what mattered, I suppose.
Can I sort of shift the focus?
Yes, please do.
A little bit. Going right back to 54, when you joined the firm,
mm-hmm.
How would you describe the firm at that time? Was it was it a big jobbing firm? Did back office figure?
No, it wasn't a big jobbing firm. Mm. I mean, it was just beginning to grow, I would describe it as. So it had its first merger. It was a small firm, like most other firms were.
Mm.
Had an ambitious boss, former Esmond Erlacher, who knew where he wanted to go. In many ways, it was a scrappy little firm, I suppose, you know, in retrospect, in the sense that had very poor offices. We were in the basement of 20 Copthall Avenue. Pretty old furniture, not well organised and run. The manager at that time, I suppose, was responsible for everything apart from the dealing, really, whether you're talking about, you know, rent or anything else. Nobody really cared too much about what hours you worked and this sort of thing.
Mm.
We had, as a brewery jobber, I mean, we had, to give you a feel of the place, we had sandwiches delivered every night into the firm. Mm. We had crates of beer stacked in the corner, which got delivered by one of the breweries. Anybody that came in and saw us had a bottle of beer to drink, you know, it's that sort of organisation.
So there was a little bit of contact with the firms in whose stocks the jobbing firm traded.
I think there was, yes.
Mm.
Hmm.
And what else did the back office consist of, apart from crates of beer and...
In terms of number of people?
In terms of people and organisation.
We had names clerks, jobbers ledger clerks, dividend clerks, transfer clerks, checking clerks.
Hmm.
Which is probably about 20 people at that stage, and some comptometer operators, a couple of typists, manager and deputy manager. Hadn't got section managers and no one like that. Mm. Just had a manager and deputy manager.
And
we had some people who were responsible for balancing. Did it full time.
Mm.
I think we ended up with five people. Mm. Percy Forsyth, who was a dealing partner, came back into the office to control the balancing team. And, so I think we ended up with five people, and they still never balanced.
Mm.
So that was the firm, I suppose, actually, apart from the dealers, the blue buttons.
And how did things develop as far as the firm was concerned. Did the merger with Bone Oldham, for example, have a big impact on the firm? That was about 1960, I imagine.
Yes, I think the first thing was that we were outgrowing the premises, and the decision was made to merge the two firms together and have new premises to merge in, to put the merged firm in. That's when we moved to Austral House mm-hmm. in 1960, and the firms came together. I think Bone actually was a better run firm than Wedd at that time. Oh, sorry, Derlecker at that time. Mm-hmm. I think their managements were better. And I suppose at that stage we had, can't remember how many floors we had in Austral House, two, I think. And the place was half empty, in actual fact. And it carried on growing, and I thought, I think really the Bone went on to our, they were a manual firm, that's right. They were completely manual books when we merged. They went on to our punch card accounting system. But as a firm, they managed themselves well. They were a sort of smaller knit firm and well managed by the manager at the time. I can't remember who became manager at that stage. Sydney. Oh, we'd merged, another firm merged into the firm part of that, A.O. Goodday. Mm-hmm. Sydney Green was manager of Goodday.